Okay, we finished copyright law, which is the largest part of intellectual property law for what communications professionals really need to know. But I want to spend a little bit more time on some of the other areas of intellectual property law, such as trademarks, trade secrets, patents, etc. We'll start with trade secrets. Don't want to spend a lot of time on them. We spent some time on them in Chapter 9. We understand that there are some sorts of secrets like food formulas, like the formula for Coke or the Colonel's Herbs and Spices or formulations for toothpaste, that should not be readily available to the public to provide the opportunity for business to succeed. So even though it's not a highly protected area, there is a notion that businesses who spend a lot of time and effort developing these formulas for different kinds of popular food and drinks should be able to be protected. Generally speaking, this is regulated by state law. There is a Uniform Trade Secrets Act that provides guidance to the states, and the notion again is that information derives value from not being generally known. So a trade secret is not public, but if, for example, somebody were to independently develop the formula for Coca-Cola, they could use it. Patent law, the information is out there, but even if someone develops the information out of a patent, they are forbidden to use it for 20-some years. So that's the difference between trade secret law and patent law. Trade secret law really is secret, and as such, there is government interest in keeping that information secret. Patent, the information is public, but there is a guaranteed government monopoly. Okay? Copyright, trademark, and patent law don't work largely because of the need to keep that information secret and to be able to make money off of that. Okay? Okay. Let's talk a little bit about trademark and service marks. Trademark and service marks are regulated both at the state and federal levels. So all the different marks that are on this slide are either trademarks or service marks. Coca-Cola is a trademark. Kodak is a trademark. KFC is a trademark. Trademarks provide protection for the identities of goods. Service mark is for services. So for example, Hertz, IBM, insurance companies like Geico and General Mills, etc. For our purposes, trademark, we'll use the term trademark for everything. Again, as we talked about earlier on, it is in place to enable the consumer to have some protection that when he or she buys a good or a service, he or she knows the kind of good or service that they're getting. That wonderful red can up there in the corner is Coke. When I buy that can, I want it to taste like a Coke, and trademark provides me some assurance that when I buy that product, it will taste the way I expect it to. So any sort of business can apply for a trademark. I've given you some common ones here. And it's all about defending marks because they are indicative of the quality of the product. Coke pays an awful lot of money to protect the Coke trademark. KFC, Kodak, Xerox, Disney, Adidas, Nike, all of them spend an awful lot of money to protect their famous marks. And as we're going to see, there are some tools that they've got to do that. The Lanham Act is the U.S. federal regulation, and there are also state regulations. Again, trademarks are for goods, so Starbucks or Coke or KFC. Service marks are for service or services companies like Citibank, HBO, Hertz, Geico, you name it. If you want to have a trademark, you can register through it. Register it at the federal government level through the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, USPTO.gov. Trademarks are not that expensive to register, and they need to be renewed. When we get to patents, that's a whole other story. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes. A trademark is any word, name, symbol, or device, or any combination thereof, adopted and used by a manufacturer or merchant to identify his or her goods and services. So a slogan, Coke is it, that can be trademarked. A design, notice the shape of the Coca-Cola bottle, that kind of curvy shape. Pepsi's bottles can't look like that because Coke owns the trademark on the bottle shape. A sound, NBC, or the AT&T, da-da-da-da-dun. Those can be trademarked, and they are. A color, that lovely sort of turquoisey blue that's at the bottom there. Yeah, that's Tiffany, ladies and gentlemen. Tiffany blue, and the only company who can use it for jewelry is Tiffany because it's been trademarked for them. Any sort of images, like the Nike swoosh, all of those or any of those or any combination of those can be trademarked. The rule is that you have to use it in interstate commerce, that is, commerce between states, or have a bona fide or good faith intention to use it in interstate commerce. All right, so I can register a trademark with the intention to use it to sell goods and services across the country, or to have a good intention of doing so. So they either have to have a good intention or actually be using it. Okay, let's talk about some of the rules. Again, the intention is to protect against consumer confusion and promoting confidence in the market. When I buy Crest toothpaste, I have an understanding that I get a certain level of quality. When I buy Coca-Cola or Dell Computer, or I buy Aquafina water, all of those are trademarks, and I have an understanding that when I buy those, I get a certain level of quality. The owner has exclusive rights. Coke doesn't have to share its trademark with anybody else. Can be geographically limited. Okay? So in other words, you can have a maybe Jones Marketplace in Southern California, and you can also have a Jones Marketplace in New York City, and both of those can be trademarked in their geographic areas. There are things that can't be registered. Geographic names, like naming something Wisconsin or California, can't really be trademarked. First rate, A number one, super duper, that are descriptive terms, are going to be hard to trademark. The best sorts of marks, and we'll talk about the best kinds of marks in a few minutes, are made up words, Kodak, Citgo, Exxon, etc. If a mark is actually registered, it gets the R with the circle around it, which stands for registered. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has formally accepted the mark. A non-registered mark, or a mark that's in process of getting registered, will have the TM for trademark. You only get the R when you're registered with USPTO. When you initially register it, it is good for 10 years initially. You have to reaffirm it after the first 5 years, and then you have to renew it every 10 years thereafter. If you decide not to do it or you miss your deadlines, you can have the trademark go into genericide, or it can become abandoned. Okay? If it is not renewed, not used, it becomes abandoned. We'll talk about genericide in a few minutes. Okay. The best marks are distinctive and have secondary meaning. Let me explain. If I say the word Kodak, you probably think about cameras or pictures or color. Kodak has developed a secondary meaning that causes us to think about cameras or pictures, photographs, when we hear the word Kodak. It is also distinctive. In fact, George Eastman made the word up, the word Kodak up, because he knows that K's and D's are very common in all sorts of languages all over the world. So he combined the K and the D sound, came up with Kodak, and started applying it to cameras and film and photography. Kodak is a great mark for that reason. It is distinctive. We think of it automatically. And it also has developed a secondary meaning. Okay? Other examples of secondary meanings. If I were to say Macintosh, you guys would probably think of computers. You might also think of apples, or you might think of galoshes if you're in Great Britain, but Macintosh as a trademark has a pretty strong association with Apple computers. Okay? If I say, Nike, for example, you're probably not going to think of the goddess, the Greek goddess. You're probably going to think of athletic wear. So that is a distinctive secondary meaning. Okay? The best example I can think of, frankly, is Kodak, because it is distinctive. It's a made-up word, and it has developed that secondary meaning. Let me give you some examples here of strong versus weak marks. Let's say that I decide to blow this professor business, and I decide to go into making shoes. And I create a pair of shoes that are just heavenly. And I call them Lakamaka moccasins. I made that word up. Okay? It's a made-up word. I didn't make it up, actually. Someone else made it up. But it's a made-up word. Okay? When you see that word, the only thing really you're going to be thinking about are shoes. All right? Because there's an association between, I hope, when I develop my brand, there's an association between shoes and the word Lakamaka. You can also do gray elephant, because we don't think of elephants as wearing shoes. That would be a good mark also, because it's arbitrary. It's an assignment of a term to something that's not related to it. Exxon and Kodak are example of made-up words or arbitrary words. And the application of the word Apple to computers is actually sort of unique, because we don't usually think of Apple and computer as the same thing. We don't think of eating an apple while working at a computer, for example. So that makes it an arbitrary mark. So those are the best kinds of trademarks. As we move down the list, we have suggestive marks that suggest the quality or status or property of some of the products. Okay, so if I name my shoes Cushion Striders, that's still not a bad mark, because it suggests that my shoes are comfy, cushy, and happy. Okay? The example that I've always seen for a suggestive mark is Chicken of the Sea. It describes what we might consider tuna to be. Okay. Then we have marks that are purely descriptive. If I named my shoes Soft Leather Shoes, that's really just describing what the shoes look like or feel like. Those aren't usually very good marks. Chapstick is a good example. It's a stick for chapped lips. It's descriptive of what the work is. So if I called my water Clear River Water, for example, or Clear Water, that might be a descriptive mark, because the water we would hope that I would bottle would be clear. Then there is what we call a generic mark, which isn't a very good mark at all, simply calling it shoes. Now, if my shoes were to get so popular that if somebody said the word shoes, they would automatically think of my brand, that would move it up into the arbitrary category. But shoes probably is not going to be something that is going to be trademarked. All right, so the stronger marks are the arbitrary and fanciful one. The weakest ones are generic. Okay? And again, logos can incorporate the word or not as they see fit. Okay. Okay, let's talk a little bit about testing a mark. The best marks, as we mentioned, are visually and textually unique, and they have a secondary meaning, like when you think Kodak, you think film. Okay, so we've just talked about that a minute ago, and those are still important. However, marks also need to be defended. All right, they can be renewed indefinitely. Ivory soap, for example, has been around for over 100 years. But eventually, if they lose distinctiveness and are not continually monitored, they can become generic. My favorite example of generic trademark is aspirin. Aspirin used to be a trademark owned by Bayer Company. The real name for those little white tablets is acetylsalicylic acid. Try saying that three times fast. Okay? Admittedly, nobody really wants to say, honey, I have a headache, hand me an acetylsalicylic acid tablet. You really want to say, hand me an aspirin. So you sort of might understand why the term aspirin caught on so quickly. Bayer didn't do a very good job of defending the mark, and eventually they had to go to court, and the court ruled that the term aspirin had become generic. All right, so aspirin can be now anybody's aspirin. You can have Target brand aspirin or Bayer aspirin or, you know, whatever. You can have any sort of trademark associated with the term aspirin. It's generic. All right. Companies, however, work pretty hard to be sure that their marks stay non-generic, so that their marks stay robust. Okay. Sometimes magazines will host advertising that is non-genericide advertising. Let me show you an example. This happens to be an anti-genericide ad that was in a editor and publisher magazine, I believe, which is a trade magazine for journalism. You can't Xerox a Xerox on a Xerox, but we don't mind at all if you copy a copy on a Xerox copier. So this is an example of Xerox's attempt to try to keep its trademark its own trademark and not have Xerox become a generic for photocopying. Okay? It is too late for bikini, cellophane, escalator, granola, linoleum, spandex, trampoline, yo-yo, zeppelin, and zipper, among a lot others. My favorite one is zipper. Can you imagine trying to use that as a generic? Hey, dude, your zipper brand toothed closing device is open. I mean, come on, who's going to say that? You're going to say your zipper is open. You know, spandex, bikini, all of those used to be registered trademarks, but now they're generic, and anybody can make a bikini and call it whatever they want, or cellophane, or a trampoline. There are marks that are in danger. Band-Aid, that's one in danger. Chapstick, Dixie Cups, Dumpster, Frisbee, Jacuzzi, Jell-O, Kleenex, Tabasco, and Xerox, among many, many others. I mean, you can sort of again see why some of these, you know, are in danger. Are you going to say, you know, I had a Jell-O brand gelatin dessert? No, you're going to say I had a Jell-O. Or you're not going to say, hand me, you know, I cut my finger, hand me a Band-Aid brand adhesive bandage. You're going to say, hand me a Band-Aid. Now, if you do that in print, you know, Kimberly Clark, who owns, let's do a Kleenex one. Let's say that you say in a news story, she reached for a Kleenex and wiped her eyes. Kimberly Clark may well send you a letter saying, we appreciate, you know, the use of our brand and we believe that it's a really good brand, but in the future, have her reach for a Kleenex brand facial tissue or have her reach for a tissue because they want to be sure that they defend their mark. Okay. Now, it really is important to register marks. You don't have to register a trademark any more than you have to register your copyright. But it's really important because you can provide evidence that you've been using it if somebody else is squatting on it. You can sue in federal court, and without that, you're not going to be able to sue. You can get better damage awards. You have a notice of ownership. People might think that you don't own or nobody owns that mark. You get benefits for foreign registration, so you can defend your marks in other countries. And again, they are protected as long as they are in use. They never expire. There's no time limitation. There's no Sonny Bono, you know, Trademark Term Extension Act. You can keep renewing it indefinitely. However, you do have to have it for 10 years, and you do have to keep renewing it on a regular basis, and if you don't renew it, it can become abandoned. I had a student, one of the first semesters I taught here, who's from the East Coast, and she reported that her parents had bought a dealership, I think it was a car dealership or a car repair shop, and they were able to adopt the abandoned trademark, and as a result, they were able to trade on the goodwill of that trademark and didn't have to buy quite so much advertising. So, if a mark has been abandoned, it can be picked up by someone else. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about patents. Not going to spend a lot of time on it because, frankly, if you're worried about patenting something, you are going to get a bunch of lawyers involved, and it is not going to be cheap. But, along with copyright, it is in the Constitution. Congress shall have the power to promote the progress of science by securing for inventors the rights to their discoveries. Latin, patere, to lay open. And you, if you have a patent, you release that public and make it open. You lay it open. It's public now. But you are guaranteed by the government to a certain amount of time that you can have a monopoly on it, somewhere around 20 years. Okay? So even though the information is released, there is an absolute automatic monopoly on that. So, for example, Post-it notes, which is my favorite patent to talk about, there was a 20-year monopoly on Post-it type products. Now, of course, there are a lot of generics out there, but as you'll notice, they don't work quite as well. Okay? The patents are granted by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, USPTO. You can go and search their patent database if you've got an idea for an invention to see if it's already been done. But it is not cheap. I have $10,000 here, and when I showed that to my husband, who used to be a patent attorney, he laughed at me. Apparently, it's closer to $50 to $100 just for the opening shots. Okay, so it is not a cheap date to get a patent. Okay, but patents are good for inventions. This is actually the patent for the Post-it note. Okay, September 12, 1972, and you can see how they describe it. Infusion solvent dispersible, solvent insoluble, inherently tacky, elastomeric, copolymer microspheres, consists essentially of about 90% to about 99.5% by weight of at least one acrylate ester. I'm saying that wrong, I'm sure. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's a patent abstract. You can imagine why people get a lot of money to write those, because they're awful. But what it's basically saying is little dots of glue. The way Post-it notes works is that there are little tiny micro dots of glue. And that makes it, it's not a solid sheet of glue, so that makes it so that you can unstick it and restick it. Okay? So that's what a patent looks like. You don't have to memorize that. I just wanted to show it to you. Patents are first in time, first in right, which is a fancy way of saying if you get there first, you get the patent. My favorite example of this is the telephone. The gentleman on top is Alexander Graham Bell. We know him, of course, from all the inventions he did, as well as from Bell Telephones. The gentleman on the bottom is Elisha Gray. You probably have never heard of him. And the reason you never heard of him is because of 3 hours. Let me explain. On Valentine's Day, 1876, Elisha Gray had filed a patent announcement, a claim that he was going to file a patent, for an apparatus for transmitting vocal sounds telegraphically. However, Alexander Graham Bell had walked in 2 or 3 hours earlier and had filed for the same darn patent on the same kind of apparatus. The interesting thing about it, however, is that Alexander Graham Bell's description wouldn't have worked where Gray's would have. So they went to court, they argued about it, and the judgment basically came down on the side of Bell because of 2 hours. Okay? Bell is legally the inventor of the telephone, and that's why we remember him. He's a good guy. We remember him as a hero. And nobody remembers poor Elisha Gray. He is sad. Okay? And all because of 2 hours of delay. So bottom line, if you think you've got a great invention, don't wait. But don't hand it off to some fly-by-night patent person either. Retain an actual intellectual property attorney. Okay. Last topic in this is really going to be domain names. Domain names are where you log into when you want to go to a website. So for example, my website is www, which stands for World Wide Web, .freespeechrocks, which is the secondary domain, .com, which is the top-level domain. So when you go there, your computer says, oh, I'm going to read this, and I'm going to send you to this website. My domain name is not famous, except among my class, my students and my classes. Free Speech Rocks doesn't really mean anything to anybody else. But McDonald's.com does, you know, Nike.com does, and you name the, you know, Amazon.com certainly does, eBay.com does too. Those are famous marks. And there is a law that protects those marks from being diluted. Dilution in trademark law means the same thing as it does, you know, in regular life. If I dilute your drink, I'm watering it down or weakening it, okay? So if you dilute a trademark, you are weakening that mark. And under the Federal Trademark Dilution Act, you can get an injunction against another person's commercial use of a name or trademark if such use begins after the mark has become famous and causes dilution of the distinctive quality of the mark. That's a fancy way of saying if somebody tries to use your mark, to trade on your trademark after it has become famous, you can get an injunction and damages against them from using that mark if they're diluting it. What's important about this for our purposes, other than trademark law, is it's also been used in domain names. McDonald's, of course, owns McDonald's trademark for hamburgers and, you know, fast food kind of products. McDonald's also owns McDonald's.com. But it didn't buy it up immediately. There was a journalist who bought the domain name before McDonald's did and tried to basically said, you guys were idiots, you should have bought this up sooner because the internet is going to be a big deal, but I'll give it back to you if you buy me a McDonald's, you know, if you send me a certificate for a Big Mac and fries. McDonald's sued him and lost, and McDonald's ended up having to pay a bunch of money to get a bunch of kids internet access, you know, in somewhere in the East. Okay? So domain names are big business, and somebody can squat on them. In fact, I just got an email in my mail the other day from somebody who wanted to buy freespeechrocks.net. Now, I'm not really worried about having all the permutations of my domain name because really I only need freespeechrocks.com, and I'm not worried about other people going on my other sites. Okay? But that is cyber squatting. It is buying up a domain name that might belong to someone else and trying to sell it back to them for a profit. The big case to know in this area is the Panavision case. Dennis Teppan did a stupid thing by annoying the lawyers. Dennis Teppan bought Panavision.com. Panavision is basically widescreen color. It's a format used in making movies. And it's a fairly famous mark for those people who are in the movie industry. Dennis Teppan bought Panavision.com the same way he had bought NorthwestAirlines.com, DeltaAirlines.com, USSteel.com, and attempted to extort money out of the trademark holder. Panavision, though, wasn't going to cave. They took him to court. Teppan said, well, you know, frankly, I'm entitled to this. If your attorney has advised you otherwise, he's trying to screw you. He wants to blaze new trails in the legal frontier at your expense. Why do you want to fund your attorney's purchase of a new boat or whatever when you can facilitate the acquisition of Panavision.com cheaply and simply instead? So he was basically saying to Panavision, look, you can pay me $13,000 or you can go to court and pay your attorneys hundreds of thousands of dollars. Why waste the money? Panavision said, took him to court and won under dilution. He was diluting the mark by squatting on it and claiming it was his. Okay? All right. Congress stepped in 1999 and provided the Anti-Cyber Squatting Consumer Protection Act. I always giggle about the word cyber squatting. It's a word that sounds dirty but isn't. But they basically said, you know, this is a federal policy. We want to make sure that people who own these marks are entitled to them and aren't, you know, losing them to cyber squatters for the attempt of basically trying to sell them to other people for a profit. Okay? So if you own a famous mark, like say you register your famous trademark and you get the mymark.com on it, and somebody buys the mymark.net and tries to extort money out of you, you can use the Dilution Act as well as the Anti-Cybersquatting and Consumer Protection Act. Okay? And they can transfer the domain. You can actually proceed what they call in rem. Even if there's an anonymous registrar, you can actually proceed against that person and recover the domain name from them. So essentially, it's another layer of protection for domain names, which are increasingly becoming an important part of intellectual property. And that, my friends, is Chapter 6. Whew! Like I said, it's growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And pretty soon it'll be a whole semester's worth of work. Fortunately, that's not for you.